The Athletic.
The race is on, and Fernando Alonso has made his move in the F1 2025 driver market by committing his future to Aston Martin into F1's new regulations era. But why has he given up on a move to Red Bull or Mercedes, and what does it mean for the rest of the market? I'm Ed Stewart, and joining us with all the answers are Ben Anderson and special guest Lawrence Barreto. Well, Lawrence, welcome back to the podcast. I think this is the third time we've had you on as a guest. Obviously, a big-time television star on F1.com and Channel 4 these days. So thank you very much for stooping to our level.
Well, thank you very much for having me back. I wasn't sure after the last time whether you would welcome me back, but the smiles on both your face and Ben's face tells me that you are excited to have me here.
Very.
Well, the great thing is this is a bit of a getting the band back together again, isn't it? Because obviously we all work together at Autosport, so we've covered Grand Prix together as a brilliant three-pronged team. So it's great. Ben, are you happy to be back with Lawrence Barreto? I think this is your first collaboration with him since those days.
Absolutely delighted. It's like halcyon days have returned, isn't it, Barreto? He's missed me so much that he's had to come back on this podcast just to talk to me.
And I needed 5 years in between just to kind of get over the last stint together.
But the thing is with Lawrence Barreto, though, is he has gone on to very big things. He's very big time now. Big star at the heart of F1. So you've just gone from strength to strength, haven't you?
I'm not big time and I'm not at the heart of F1.
Big time Barreto, that's what we call you. We are humbled
modesty
in your presence.
I'm pretty sure that's what I'm saved in Ed Straw's phone as, big time Barreto.
Yeah, you are, yeah. It just reflects your star status and your renown for your shoes and all these other things. And those days when you're just running around the world covering Grand Prix and you were looking for good quality burgers, long gone.
Oh no, I'm still looking for good quality burgers, don't worry. And obviously,
how's the book coming along, Barreto?
The book, Ben Anderson, is written. I just need to go and find a publisher to publish it.
Ah, okay.
So if anyone listening is a publisher, wants to publish my book, feel free to get in touch.
I think you probably should promote your book a little bit more in terms of what you're selling, because it currently just says my book. You've just said my book. But this is the definitive burger book. Let's have a pitch here, because then if you do get a publisher, we can claim to have set it up and we will be entitled to a slice of your vast profits.
Oh, maybe we shouldn't talk about it now then. But this podcast has definitely got a different direction.
I expect a name check, because I have dined on some of these burgers that are no doubt in the book, particularly ones from Austin, which I think was quite highly rated far as calendar goes.
Ed Straw has been at a burger eaten.
Of course.
We have had some terrible burgers as well.
What does that mean?
Well, Ed Straw's a big fan of burgers, aren't you?
I have a vague, yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I have a vague recollection of a terrible burger in Sao Paulo Airport, maybe. I think we may have been there for that. I don't know. But Lawrence obviously doesn't remember the bad ones. He only remembers the great ones.
No, it's a high bar. It's a very high bar. And that was even, 2015. So the bar's probably got higher now because so many more burgers have been consumed.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the running tally is at the minute, but it's definitely over 200 that I've recorded.
Best country on the F1 calendar for burgers?
Canada.
Oh, bold choice. A bold choice.
Yeah, it's a slightly left field. I appreciate that.
I'm going to be in Montreal in a few months, so I might get some extra recommendations. But anyway, enough burger chat, although there's a whole...
Are you sure, Ed?
Well, I'll tell you what. There's a burger podcast series to go with the book, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe a television series. I can see that.
Pitching for more work, Ed, are you?
For you to get more work, and then we'll take our slice, 10% each, dual agents. I like this setup. You see, this podcast opening up all these opportunities. We thought we'd just have you talking about F1.
But... Oh, it's so good to be back with you guys. So good.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you back. We will get on to the topic at hand now. And Lawrence, Fernando Alonso, his Aston Martin future's assured. A new multi-year deal's been announced. That'll keep him at the team to at least the end of 2026. Any surprise this one's done and dusted so early?
No, I think that Fernando probably realised pretty quickly that although there were plenty of seats available, arguably at teams that are slightly more competitive at the minute, Aston Martin does genuinely represent the best spot for him. I think he's made a few wrong moves in his career and he's in a team that is going in the right direction. It's a team that is throwing everything behind him as a driver and will give him everything he needs to succeed and get that 33rd win. And I think from that perspective, when he kind of weighed it up and it became clear that maybe, Red Bull, Mercedes, they weren't too keen to get a deal done that quickly, it made sense for him to commit to Aston Martin, I think.
It's the safe choice, isn't it? It's the logical choice. A little bit boring for us because, you know, it would have been great to see Alonso in a Red Bull, maybe even up against Max Verstappen. I know it's, you know, almost pie in the sky stuff because of Verstappen's grip on that team. And Alonso maybe works better as an insurance policy against Max leaving. It's kind of unfortunate that that team is so chaotic behind the scenes right now, because I feel like there was an opportunity there and we were led to believe Alonso was pushing quite hard to get in there because it's the quickest, shortest route to a world title shot. And he's not getting any younger, even though he obviously can, he keeps defying time somehow. And yet Red Bull, obviously, they're going to wait. You know, they need to see what Max decides to do, whether he makes good on some veiled threats to leave or they call his bluff or whatever. The Perez seat is, in theory, open. But again, the dynamic of an Alonso Verstappen, it's not a surefire thing. So even Alonso alluded to the need to time, you know, being an issue. You know, teams maybe needing more time to make decisions. And I can well imagine that Aston, who it makes complete sense for to keep Alonso, probably went, look, we'll throw the absolute kitchen sink at you, give you everything you want if you sign now. But if you want to hang on for Red Bull or Mercedes or whatever, well, we need to start shopping around to make sure we have our own insurance policy. And I guess when the Red Bull door really became closed properly, then it makes total sense with Red Bull off the table that Alonso would stay put, because Mercedes, it's, you know, at the moment, a sideways step at best, probably.
And I think when it comes to Red Bull, I've seen a little bit of narrative going around on social media that means Alonso's scared of being up against Max. But I don't know about you, Lawrence, but I don't think there's any chance that Alonso would...
Is he scared of anything?
No, he would. I think if you said to him, here's a Red Bull deal for next year, he wouldn't think for a second. He'd be signed and he'd be in, wouldn't he? I don't think he'd have any fear about that.
Yeah, 100%.
No, I think he'd take 1 year. He'd take whatever they offered him. He'd take six races just to prove that he could do it, because I think Fernando genuinely thinks that he is the best option for any team on the grid at any point in time. So I think he would have taken it for sure. He would have backed himself to beat Max if they put him alongside. And he would have seen the longer game, I think. So, yeah, I completely agree.
I mean, longer term, maybe Red Bull isn't the absolute best bet. You know, the engine thing with Ford coming in and brand new powertrains division taking over from Honda for 2026. That's the big question mark over Red Bull. It has to be factored into Verstappen's thinking. But Alonso really only has to think short term. I know he's talking about this Aston deal as a long term thing and it takes him beyond the end of his driving career as well. But in terms of actually achieving results, it's very much jam tomorrow, isn't it? There's a lot of things that still have to come together for Aston to actually have a chance of being even a race winner, never mind a title contender. So logically, Red Bull is the best bet, even if it falls apart in a year or two. That's still enough time for Alonso to do what he needs to do. But with Aston, there are no guarantees.
It was interesting because he did a little press conference, well, a reasonably lengthy one, actually, after the announcement. And he talked about this is his longest ever contract because there's this intention to have a non-driving role beyond whatever point at which he retires. And he says, I don't know when I'll retire because I haven't got there yet. So he's not ruling
out.
What's
he going to be? Team principal? Team owner?
Well, who knows? Ambassador with a big paycheck and no particular job responsibilities. Probably that's what these things sometimes end up being. But
sounds sweet.
Ben would sign up for that, I'm sure.
Yeah, can I have that for the race, please, Ed?
You have to go above my head on that one, I'm afraid. There's far more important people who can decide that. But I think what it said to me is, obviously, he could have probably just extended the current deal. I think the belief was there was a plus one option there, probably on his side. But this is a new deal. So I assume what he's done is gone to Aston Martin and said, right, well, this is my best, and this is my best option. So I'm going to commit. But if you want me to commit, you commit to me. And not only do I guarantee two more years driving at least, taking him into the new rules era, which he said was very important with Honda arriving, the new cars, etc.
And for the team too, because they need a reference, don't they? And he's among the best references you could have when there's so much else is changing.
Absolutely. No, it's great for them. And that's why they're willing to pay. But I think also the fact there's this long-term element of it, he wouldn't say how long this contract is. I did ask him, because you never know. Sometimes people say how long the deals are. And I thought it was worth a go. But he said it was his longest ever contract. I think Ferrari, he had a five-year deal at one stage, probably. So you end up with something that's clearly going a very, very long time and presumably a lot of money as well. It sounds like it's going to take him into 2030 and beyond. So I would imagine Aston Martin have had to pay for this as well. And it's Alonso thinking, well, I might as well also cash in. And if you back me, I'll back this team to the hilt. And he was talking about being part of building up Aston Martin, etc. Do you sort of agree with that reading, Lawrence? Do you think he said, right, well, as well as getting the extra years, I'll make sure I get something that's great financially, because there's not that many big contracts to drive in his future?
Yeah, I think as much as Fernando will probably say he can drive on into his late 40s and 50s, I'm sure he's got a reality button in his head that says, look, let's just try and make the most of it while the going's good. And Aston, from the very beginning, said essentially, Fernando, we want you, like, name your terms, essentially. So yeah, he would have known that he could have got the very best out of that deal. And you mentioned that, you know, it's a really long contract. I'm sure he's got his eyes on what other racing series Aston will enter in the future. It makes sense to kind of tie up with them, and they'll throw all of the resource, all of Lawrence Stroll's billions, they'll throw at these kind of racing programs. And I do think that Fernando thinks he can go on for the foreseeable future, whether or not that is in Formula One. So it makes sense for him to kind of nail his colours to a mast of a company that are going to throw money at a project and really try to do the best. And I think Fernando always thinks that if he's got a machine that can be in the fight, he reckons he can go and make the difference and win. So yeah, it makes sense for him to take everything that Aston threw at him. I remember when I interviewed him at the start of the season, and he pointed out the fact that he was the only world champion still on the grid that was available. And he was like, well, obviously everyone wants me. And he says it without a hint of irony. I love that about him. But obviously he went into this knowing that Aston was going to take him whatever, essentially. So I'm sure he went and had his chats with Red Bull, and he would have had his chats with Mercedes and seen what was going there. But Aston makes a lot of sense, I think, for him. And he'll be there for as long as he wants. And I'm pretty sure Aston will take him for as long as he wants to be there.
And he ran through his reasoning for why it played out this way. He said he wanted to see the first few races just to check that he still got the drive for this 24 race season, because it's a huge commitment of time.
Do you believe that, though?
No, well, I was about to say, I think this was more about just pausing to see what might be possible with Red Bull, see how Mercedes starts, yes, just in case there was a better option. I think that's what this was about. But he also said that he was convinced because he's seen some good upgrades from Aston Martin. He says upgrades at each race, they've all worked quite well. So claims to be convinced in the projects. But the whole age thing is interesting, Ben, isn't it? Because he'll be, I think, 45 at the end of this current driving contract element, because, like I say, he's committed to the end of 26. And yeah, it's a funny situation. It's a great test, because if there is any decline with age that he's already had, it's imperceptible. It's lost in the noise of how good he already is and yeah, the experience he's got. But it's going to be a really interesting test. And I imagine Alonso sat there thinking, not only how long will I be keen to do this, but also, will I detect any drop-off? He's always talking up how good he is and how everything's great, fitness, that kind of thing. He loves talking himself up. Yeah. And unusually, he's
modest,
normally
Fernando,
accurate. Well, because he is outstanding. He's still performing superbly. But
yeah, he's
what
bionic,
do you think?
Exactly.
Well, how long can this go on? Or does it just reflect that determination? And where does that come from, that need to keep going at a point where most have long since retired?
Yeah, I think he has probably the biggest hunger or drive motivation of anyone. It's so many drivers have said, as they've got to the latter part of their career, that you have to work harder to basically stand still, especially off track.
Yeah, because more training, you can't, that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, you cannot really fight some kind of physical decline. You can only manage it as best you can. So he will be training like a demon off track to essentially, I think he says that he's got the body of someone 10 years younger, right, when they do fitness tests or whatever. I can believe that, but it requires total dedication. And he's used that phrase, I think, himself a few times in terms of the commitment he has to ask of himself to do F1 and continue doing it, because he's got all the usual demands that every driver has. I'm sure a lot of the PR demands he will gently push away, although it does sound like he's been more committed to that side since he came back. Having a break probably re-energized him, and he's talked about having a better perspective of the wider demands of F1 and how important it is to not dismiss those and just be completely tunnel vision on the driving and the performance. But I think he has capacity to do those things as well, because he's so focused off the track on giving everything he has to F1. He has probably the fewest distractions of anyone. You know, he's mentioned family quite a few times recently. He's at an age where that perhaps comes into the rearview mirror a bit more.
Well, an interesting thing is he does say he's changed a bit how he does things. He has more family at races now. Mm. He said he needed to make a few little shifts in order to serve that. So you're
well,
absolutely
he's Uncle
right.
Fernando he now, isn't he? And you know that.
Should we start calling him that, Lawrence? Call him that in the next interview.
He is Uncle Fernando, and you
know, no.
You should, oh, go on, Barreto. It's got to be worth it. He is. It's a fact.
Something tells me he will not see the funny side.
But, you know, having kids in your life, even if they're not directly your kids, it does change your perspective a bit. And he will be aware of that responsibility and the joy you can get from that. And making space for that in your life can be empowering as well as draining. But, you know, let's focus on the positive side of things. So he has, but he hasn't got space in his life really for that fully. So I guess he's kind of at a crossroads of life where each year he will have to ask himself, do I want to continue to sacrifice the other things in life so that I can give everything of myself to F1? And because of his age, he has to give more because he doesn't recover in the same way physically, and he's older and he's got more demands on his time, etc. I guess, you know, when he asks himself that question, still he has the motivation to do it because he can see a path to success, potentially. I'm not fully convinced on the Aston Martin thing. I mean, they're doing so much. They're definitely pushing really hard to try and break into the upper echelon. But, you know, he said himself after Suzuka, he's driven, once again, his best race, his best ever race. He loves saying that.
No, it was one of his top five, not his best ever.
One of his top five, yeah. I mean, it was a phenomenal performance, right? So It's fair. But he ends up however many seconds, 40 seconds off the win. You know, he doesn't find that satisfying. So there will always be, while he's not in the best car, that tension between what Alonso can do and how much of himself he gives and the result not matching that ambition. I think he got a boost from being on the podium a few times last season and tasting that champagne a bit and the adulation that comes from it. But it won't be enough. You know, he's a guy that's used to winning. He wants to be the best and get the best results. And if the Aston Honda project doesn't continue that trajectory towards ultimate success, then, you know, things will fall apart quicker than 2027 or 2030 for sure.
But I think there's a lot to be said though for Fernando not having much outside of Formula One, aside from the family side of things. I think when he first left Formula One, I think he realised he couldn't get that kind of buzz that he gets from Formula One. So he's had the fortune of going away, leaving it and coming back.
Yeah.
And I know that he talks about like a lot of races and it is putting more of a strain on him and the fitness that he has to put into. But I still think he generally feels at the minute he can't do anything else other than Formula One. He knows that without Formula One, he's not nothing, but I think there's a massive...
But he is nothing.
But I think it leaves a massive hole, honestly. I think hole that at the minute he can't cope with. And I think that's why he keeps pushing on him. Even though he hasn't got a car this year that can fight for the podium, so like you mentioned, Ben, that he kind of got a real kick out of last year, I still think it's enough for him to be kind of putting in those performances where, what was it, fifth in Japan, he's called it a superhero performance. I think that's enough for him to get that kind of kick out of he's doing better than anyone else could with the machinery that he's got. So I think kind of going forward at the minute, at least in the short term, even with 24 races and a car that isn't capable of fighting for a podium every race, I think he's happy with that. I think he's happy with everything that he's got and the direction that the team are going in.
I think he's also got a lot of spare capacity as well. You know, he's always struck me as a driver who is able to operate slightly below his red line and still get tremendous performance out of himself and the car. And I think that buys him, in terms of his age and longevity, extra space compared to other people who are maybe having to perform more at their limit more of the time, which takes more out of themselves and therefore shortens their span. I think Alonso is just one of these, partly because of his intelligence, but also because of his, you know, drive and physical fitness. He's just able to operate in a way that means he's less drained, I think, every race he does.
The interesting thing is, with Alonso, is I think he'd have been racing on well into his 40s, whatever happened in something. But I do wonder how much the fact he has, and it sounds absurd to say this, he has underachieved in terms of pure results only 32 wins, only two world championships, compared to what we're seeing Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel even, racking up. I think we'll give him just that drive to try and get a bit more. Having that third championship, I think, appeals, because he is an all-time great, no question. It doesn't really matter whether you have two, three, four, five world championships, fundamentally. If you can win certainly more than one world championship, it shows how good you are. But that's got to be a big thing for him, hasn't it, Lawrence? This sort of need to hope against hope and keep battling on, that maybe there are more wins there and there could even be a championship.
He just can't let it go. I think he does feel like across his career, he's just made maybe a number of mistakes in the way that he decides which team he's going to be driving for and where he's going to move throughout his career. And I think the difference right now is those podiums that he got last year kind of reminded him that actually he can do it. Like, it's one thing to say and continue to say he is the best and he can do whatever he wants to do and deliver all the results. But I think it's quite another thing for him to then prove to himself that he can do it. And I think he's seen enough at the minute to suggest that, okay, maybe that third championship's probably out of reach, but I think he sees how cool it would be and how historic it would be for him to get another victory, to get another group of victories kind of going forward. I think that would be enough for him to kind of remind everyone that he hasn't got the championships that are equal to his talent in his mind. But if he can go and win races, you know, decade after he last won a race, I think that will be enough for him right now.
I think it feeds into the age thing as well. I imagine in his head, he would love to be the oldest driver to still race in F1, or the oldest driver to achieve a podium finish, or the oldest driver to ever win a race, because it's those kind of things that he could achieve, a realistic, the world title, it's a long shot now if he's not going to be in a Red Bull. And for someone so good, and someone who says, well, you know, because of my ability and my success, I'm able to control my own destiny and where I end up. I mean, it doesn't always ring true in terms of what's happened throughout his career. As you mentioned, Lawrence, he's made some mistakes. He has a reputation, unfairly or not, for being disruptive in a team, for me maybe being a bit too Alonso-centric in his approach. That's maybe mellowed as he's gotten older. But, you know, certainly drivers like Lewis and Sebastian Vettel who've achieved more in pure numbers, and in Vettel's case, I'd say probably a lesser driver than Alonso overall, but they had certain other elements to their game in terms of how they worked with teams that made them the kind of driver that those teams wanted to build around and gel with. Also, some of it's circumstantial. You know, Vettel got into Red Bull as they were coming up and then they dominated for a few seasons. He made the most of that. Alonso left a very high-performing team in acrimonious circumstances in McLaren and kind of never really recovered from that. Went to Ferrari, great punt, but, you know, they just didn't quite have the technical capabilities to beat Red Bull. He got close. So he's just been unlucky, as much as he's also made life hard for himself. And also, I do agree, fundamentally, he's a much better driver than the numbers show, but that's going to be the case for many examples through history. And if he can't get the absolute results of a Vettel or a Lewis Hamilton, there are still things he can chase. He loved going for the triple crown when he was looking outside of F1 in the McLaren Honda misery years. And now I think it will be purely the age thing. How long can I keep this going? How much can I achieve at a ridiculous age compared to drivers of the past? That will give him a kick, certainly.
And that's another way that can mark him out as a great, isn't it? So that, yeah, when you're having that conversation about who is the greatest, he can argue, well, actually, look what I've done. So I take your point. He can only do what is in his control, right? And yeah, at the minute, that is what he's got. That's what he's got to aim for.
There's some tantalising records there. Louis Chiron's the oldest man to start a Grand Prix, which he did at the age of 55. So Alonso would have to go on.
And there's a statue of him, isn't there?
There is, down by swimming pool. Yeah. Yeah, well, it was, and I think Chiron was towards the upper end of 55, if you see what I mean. So I think probably Alonso would have to go on to what, 2037 to do that?
That's the next contract.
But that's well, it's always possible. And Chiron tried to qualify at Monaco, which of course was his home Grand Prix, at 58, I think. So
the statue? Oh no, him himself.
No, him himself. And then he was the clock of the course at Monaco as well. There's old footage of him in parading around the pavements, amazing, holding his flags during the race. It's fantastic. What a legend. But anyway, this isn't about Louis Chiron, but I like to make such...
We're veering into that territory now, aren't we? Because Alonso just won't stop.
Well, exactly, yeah. But certainly, well, Alonso's a legend, whatever happens. And I think it's great for Formula One fans and Aston Martin, actually, that he's keeping going. So this is definitely...
But he's still mega, isn't he? It's one thing if you are declining. We've seen drivers like Kimi Raikkonen. Let's be frank, you know, he went on for a long time. Great for him. But in the last few seasons, he wasn't performing at his best. In fact, for a long time, you could have said that. But Alonso is. There doesn't really... I qualify this slightly because we haven't had the teammate comparison in this like Alonso Mark 2 or 3 phase of his career. Lance Stroll isn't on the same level. But... the results he seems to be getting out of the car relative to where we think it is are extraordinary. And other drivers in recent times who've gone on into the 40s, like Alonso is doing now, haven't been at that level. So that is extraordinary to me.
And he's able to do it consistently as well, isn't he? Yeah, so it's not just he's not just super pulling it out at his favourite tracks and things like that.
Comes back to the capacity again, I think. You know, he's just not, he doesn't have to go to 100% to get these incredible results and performances.
Yeah, normally you'd expect a veteran driver to be more the safe pair of hands, wouldn't you? Yes. And Alonso actually is a safe pair of hands, but he's more than a safe pair of hands. That's the way I look at it. But yeah, he's going to continue to be a strong force in F1 for the next few years, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he carries on beyond 2026. We'll get back to the pod in a moment, but first, a word about our partner, Grammarly. No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. All those emails, reports, and presentations are equally important to the collaboration needed to get things done. And Grammarly can help. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. I know from experience that Grammarly can help you save time on any writing task and ensure you feel confident about what you've produced. In fact, 96% of Grammarly's users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing, and their tone suggestions can help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done. Well, let's look at the driver market beyond Alonso, Ben. How do you see it playing out from here? Who will be the next to make a move? We've had Hamilton, we've had Alonso. What's going to be next?
No pressure, Ben. No pressure.
I'm sure the listeners are delighted to hear another set of predictions from us on this podcast that turn out to be wrong when it comes to the 2025 driver market.
We did the catch-all caveat. When we did that podcast at the start of the season, we said something seismic could change it all.
Yeah.
And so it came to pass.
Yes, Hamilton. Yeah, he'll retire or whatever because the Mercedes is no good. Oh, hang on a second. He's thrown a massive curveball out and completely blown up the whole market.
Which can always happen.
Indeed, yes. And it has happened. So... yes, Hamilton, obviously the first trigger. Now Alonso, a big player, has made his call to stay put, unlike Lewis. So I think the next trigger point has to be Sainz. He's kind of the top free agent, I think, still on the market.
He's in a horrible position.
Well, you know, he's driving brilliantly for Ferrari, so strengthening his case. I think he's got two realistic options. He either holds on in... the hope that Red Bull drops Perez and wants a stronger teammate to kind of insure them against, you know, the rising tide of Ferrari. You know, they've got pretty much a super team, if you like, of Leclerc and Hamilton paired and coming on strong as a constructor, probably will throw everything at 2025 to try and dethrone Red Bull in the hope that Red Bull kind of plateaus before the next rule change. Do they need, will Perez do a good enough job up against that? In the second car, he hasn't needed to so far. He's driving better now. So it's a lot of ifs and buts. It's the best option for Sainz if he can get in, if Verstappen's happy with it, if Red Bull decides to drop Perez. How long can he hold on for that? I think that's his best bet. But if he can't wait or Red Bull's minded to stick rather than twist, then I think his best option is to take the Audi offer, which seems pretty solid. You know, it'd be long-term, lucrative. He can... have a project just like Fernando, to build around him. He'd be a great driver for that team, even though it's a step back in the short term into the midfield, which I think is beneath Sainz. You know, he's a top driver, I think, at the moment and deserves to be in a top team. But short of that, you know, Audi's is an ambitious thing that he can focus on. And then, you know, once you get into 26, 27, whatever, see where the land lies, maybe he can go on to better things. So once Sainz has done his thing, then I think it's Mercedes. I don't really see the point of Sainz going there.
Well, I don't. Ultimately, I think the problem is Sainz isn't high up their list. He has had some conversations with them.
Antonelli's number one, but
it's,
right?
I think it's worth delving into Sainz a little bit more, actually, because Lawrence, obviously, he's performing so well. We know what Carlos Sainz can do. Audi Sauber seems like the most likely path. The trouble is, I'm not sure he really wants to go there, does he? That's sort of the fullback option.
Yeah, I don't like. There's no disrespect to Sauber and to Audi, and you know what Andrea Seidel's trying to put together. But I think if you look at where Carlos is in his career right now, arguably the second best driver in terms of pure form on the grid at the minute, the prospect of going to a team who are struggling
Fernando
to do
number
the...
one or Verstappen number one.
Yes, but I'm going to put Max there. I know Fernando would disagree with me, but yeah, I know. But I think the prospects of Sainz going to a team who are struggling to do their pit stops, let alone putting a car out there that's delivering on track consistently, is pretty disappointing. I think he's 30 this year. But if you think about where he is at the minute, he needs a car that can compete. And
he's better than that team, isn't he? This is the Bottas good time, string out your career move, not the, you know, I'm going to still conquer the world and win races move.
And as good as, you know, Audi buying 100% of the team, throwing all the resource at it, Formula One, it takes years to get to the front. And I can't see Audi being up the front until 2030, to which point Carlos is going to be 36.
Maybe. I mean, BMW won one race, didn't they? When they took on that team, you know, with big ambitions. Like there's forewarning there. It's still Sauber at the end of the day. It's not, you know... It's not the biggest team in F1 that's just waiting to be woken up by a great engine.
And there's a lot of work to do at that team, you know, to upgrade the facilities, to get the processes in place, to be, you know, acting and working like a big team. Like, there's just so much to do there that I think, you know, the reason why, Ed, you said Carlos doesn't really want to go there. I think that's the truth just because of where he is currently in terms of pure performance. And the problem is he can't wait, can he? Ben, Ed, he can't wait for Red Bull to decide, because if he does that, he might literally be left with nothing. So he's got to jump at some point.
I think he could wait if he thought there was a realistic chance, but I think it's a very long shot. Plus, Audi, of course, know that this is the case, and so they'll be saying, right, well, if you don't sign this now, it'll be off the table, and
exactly.
Because it seems like they're going to have Hülkenberg, and they've got someone like Ocon is on the list as an alternative, so they can bring pressure to bear.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
particularly if they're offering, because they'll be offering pretty big money and pretty long term, I imagine, to Sainz.
Yeah, exactly. And there is a lot to be said for that, you know, a long term project, like you said, Ben. But I'm just not sure that that's the project that he wants at the minute. I think he would want to take a gamble. That's why I think he'd want to wait for Red Bull. Or personally, I think he might want to give a gamble on a Williams, maybe, because if you want the short term, you want a slightly better short term option, Williams are in a much better spot than Sauber at the minute. And even when Audi come in 2026 with an engine that's unproven, of course, and who they started development significantly after all of the other engine manufacturers they're going to be up against, it's still going to take them several years, whereas at least it feels like Williams are going in the right direction. And the kind of problems that they've had this year, you know, with them not having a spare chassis and being short on parts, this is a short-term issue. Like, they should be much better set next year. And it just feels like, in terms of pure performance, he won't be fighting to get out Q1 in a Williams next year. That's just the reality of it. Whereas with a Sauber, that's what he's going to be doing. And I think that can really be a detrimental impact on you as a driver going forward, I think, on the mental side. I just think Williams is a better bet than Sauber at the minute, personally.
So let's move on to Antonelli, as you alluded to a minute ago, Ben. It does seem that Mercedes is leaning that way. It's going through this due diligence, isn't it, with him, just to make sure there's nothing unexpected.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much a shoo-in now. He was always plan A, I think, with Alonso, plan B, and now Alonso's taken himself out of the equation. It's plan A all the way, unless Antonelli falls apart somehow. But they seem so convinced about his potential and this idea that he's, you know, the second coming of Verstappen, driver they famously missed out on. And also them being a team that admits it's not really in the mix and isn't going to be until the rules change. You know, Wolf even called it a rebuilding phase for them now. So it's the kind of ideal time to take a punt on someone who's completely unproven, who you really think has what it takes, rather than need to blood him in like they did George Russell, because they had a lot to lose if they upset the apple cart too much. So that takes Mercedes out of Sainz's equation as well, I think, because he's not going to be their first option, even though logically he would be as a free agent. Actually, Mercedes has kind of isolated itself doing its own thing now that Lewis has pulled the trigger.
And Toto Wolff's made it very clear he's happy to wait and let while other alternatives sign.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
They're very confident in Antonelli. They just can't commit until they've done this process.
Yeah, exactly. So they're just hovering over the enter key, aren't they? They're just waiting for the right time. So it's a long shot there. It's a long shot at Red Bull. So it's a shame that Sainz could end up without really a top seat in the short term. But yeah, so Antonelli at Mercedes, I think, is logical for them. And if Red Bull's just doing its own thing and it becomes if they're not going to take Sainz, they're going to have to re-sign Perez, aren't they? I don't really see how Ricciardo gets in there. He's not doing a good enough job. I don't think they rate Tsunoda highly enough, even though he's driving a lot better. I don't think they'll see the mental chaos of Tsunoda, even with the speed, as an upgrade on Perez. If Perez drives like he's doing now, that's fine, isn't it? It's fine.
Yeah, I think Red Bull are in a good spot from that perspective. They've got so many options that they're in no rush to make that decision. I think based on what Checo was doing, particularly in Japan, where he struggled really a lot last year, and he's come there and he just looked like he'd made a bit of a step.
Yeah, that's the proper track that really shows that car, isn't it? And Verstappen has been imperious. So for him to be that close, that suggests he's made a genuine step forward. All the cars become so much easier to set up and drive that he's now in the window more consistently, and therefore, as it would continue into next year, most likely, he's less exposed than he was when the Red Bull was a trickier thing to work with.
Exactly. So then I think I agree. What's the point in changing that seat if Max is still going to be as dominant as he is, the car's still going to be as dominant as it is, and Checo's kind of performing at a level they've been demanding of him basically since they signed him up. But I do think that obviously the whole point of bringing Ricciardo back into the family, and the whole point of putting him in the AlphaTauri last year and the RB this year, was to give them a shot at potentially upgrading him to the Red Bull work seat. That was part of the plan. So
Horner's plan, certainly.
So I think that they may as well just leave it. They may as well just leave it, right? And give them both the shot at continuing to see whether or not they could do it. And then they just pick the best one out of those two.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
they're not in a rush, are they? They don't need to tell Checo now. If anything, I think Marco said it the other day, there's no need to tell Checo now and risk him like taking his foot off the gas. Like, you may as well kind of put them both under pressure to try and deliver. And your point you made, Ben, about Yuki is interesting, because they don't seem bothered by him, do they? Like, no matter what performance that he does and he delivers and the consistency that he's consistently showing now, he's never in the conversation. And it might be because they've got, you know, a Checo option, a Ricciardo option, a Lawson option, that they've already just mentally decided that he's not the one for them unless they really need to.
Yeah, I think he is putting himself in the shop window now for other teams, and he has to come into the conversation for some of those midfielders who will be looking for someone. I think I can definitely see Antonelli and probably Ollie Bearman at Haas coming onto the grid from underneath in F2 this year for next year, and that means two guys have to drop off, and Tsunoda wants to be one of the guys who's not in that mix. In fact, there could be three guys, because I'm pretty confident Lawson will get in at RB. So then that means if Perez is fine, it's Ricciardo versus Tsunoda for the second RB seat. And that might save Ricciardo, because he's the experienced old hand and, you know, provides a bit more of a global perspective than Tsunoda can. But if Ricciardo's performance compared to Tsunoda isn't high enough, he's gone, isn't he? There's no point persevering. And that might mean Tsunoda gets another stay of execution there, another chance to prove himself and maybe get in somewhere else when another seat opens up at the end of 25.
Well, I think RB's trending to be Tsunoda Lawson next year, I think, most likely.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And that puts Ricciardo on the market. There's obviously Alpine, you know, a team that was desirable a couple of years ago when Alonso made one of his shrewder moves and left. But now, you know, that's a mess. So you could see one or even two of those guys wanting out, and change there. But
where do they go though?
Well, this is the thing. So maybe if Sauber are going big and they manage to get Sainz in, or if Red Bull ditches Perez, he's going to be a desirable option on the market for somewhere for someone for a team like Sauber. You know, drivers like Zhou and Bottas are going to be looking for homes.
Well, they're the ones who are teetering on the precipice of dropping out of F1, I think.
I agree.
It's going to be very difficult because we're going to have probably Ollie Bearman coming in, most likely at Haas. So there's one person. I mean, Kevin Magnussen's obviously vulnerable to that. But if Hülkenberg does go to Audi Sauber, which seems very high probability, that could save Magnussen if they want an experienced hand. But then they might be tempted by a Bottas type, or maybe if they want to hit the Chinese market and push Haas there, then Zhou could work.
I think that they would... Now that Gene seems prepared to turn on the taps again, I think taking the guy with money or commercial opportunities is less important. So I feel like there's five guys who are on the bubble, and that's Zhou, Bottas, Hulk, Magnussen and Sargeant. I think Sargeant will go probably at the end of the season. So then it's out of those four. I imagine Haas will keep one of Hülkenberg and Magnussen, whichever is performing better, unless obviously Hülkenberg gets in at Sauber because they can't get their first options, in which case I think Magnussen's position is strengthened because they'll like the idea of having probably a solid guy alongside Bearman, at least for 1 year in the short term. But Bottas is probably an upgrade. So if he comes onto the market, he would be a good option for Haas if he wanted to go there. But again, so two of those guys are definitely going to go. Sargeant's probably one. So then it's a case of pick your other.
Or worse, some of them could end up at Alpine.
Yeah.
Oof. because the Alpine drivers are looking around as well. We know both of them are, you know, not decided to leave 100% and looking around, but obviously their management will not be doing their jobs if they weren't looking about the place. Ocon's out of contract. I think Gasly's got some kind of option that probably Alpine is not going to hit the performance level for. So that's an interesting... I mean, this is all the stuff that gets deferred because there's a ripple effect, isn't there? It's like a reverse of the undercut effect in that the big names and the big teams decide and then everybody just sort of looks around to make the best of what's left. And
that makes Sauber's position stronger, doesn't it? Because actually, regardless of what Sainz decides, there are quite a few drivers whose circumstances aren't great in the lower midfield who probably feel they're performing better than those circumstances. And actually, that would be quite a desirable port in a storm for them. So it strengthens Sauber's position in terms of forcing Sainz's hand as well. He can't wait, you mentioned this, Ed, as long for Red Bull as maybe he would want to, because actually there are maybe not quite as good options, but very credible alternatives for them to find for next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a complicated market, but it's going to wait for those big moves to happen. So let's see what the next step is. I think it could be a little bit longer before we see anything new. Alonso's gone relatively early, but let's see what happens next. Robert Lawrence, let's return to Aston Martin now. What do you make of the team's progress in 2024? And amid these persistent rumours of the pursuit of Adrian Newey, is he the magic bullet the team needs to realise its potential?
I'm not really sure that Aston Martin need a magic bullet, if I'm honest. I feel like they're making progress from one season to another. They're clearly investing to make that a super team, kind of like Man City in the Premier League. They're kind of spending in all the right areas. They're recruiting in the right areas. So yeah, I don't think necessarily... they need an Adrian Newey to solve all their problems. Obviously, anyone wants Adrian Newey, given what he's delivered for Red Bull over the last few years. Why wouldn't you want him at the team? But I think that part of the reason maybe why Fernando has re-signed is that he can just see the direction that the team's going in. He can see that the processes they're putting in place, the facility that they've got, the fact that they're about to go and do their whole car, obviously themselves now in-house with Honda as their works engine. I think he's seen all of that. And it just takes time, and you can't have a magic bullet. Like Toto Wolff likes to keep saying, there is no silver bullet or magic bullet or whatever type of bullet.
Oh, I knew he is though, isn't he? If there is a magic or silver bullet or whatever bullet you want to call it, it's got to be Newey, hasn't it?
If there is, then yes, it would be him. But I just don't see why they definitely need him to achieve the goals that they're doing. Like plenty of teams have gone on to win, like Mercedes.
Oh, to give them the true green Red Bull rather than the coffee that his old mates are able to do.
But isn't it down to more, what do you think Adrian wants to do? And like, is Aston Martin the kind of project that he feels like he needs to kind of get his juices flowing again? Surely a move to Ferrari and to complete maybe his career and go and win a championship with them would be a bigger thing, wouldn't it? Or is he not enjoying all of the extra work that he does on the road car side with Red Bull? Like, is that enough for him to keep him kind of staying put there?
I think it depends a lot on the off-track stuff at Red Bull, doesn't it? How that situation plays out. Because if the dynamic shifts significantly and Newey loses some of his freedom or doesn't like where it ends up in terms of leadership and structure, he's so experienced, desirable, rich, he doesn't need to stick around. So I can well see him just going, look, I've had enough of this. It's not what I signed up for. And then he can kind of have his pick. And I'm not saying that he would definitely choose Aston Martin and Stroll and Alonso just because it's sort of the next best or the next most ambitious or has the shiniest new facilities, but he might do, or he might go do something really left field, which he does like to do. And he might say, go back to Williams and where it all began and like the idea of bringing up a team that struggled for so long and really could use somebody like that to build everything around. I don't know. But I don't see him leaving Red Bull unless Red Bull implodes.
I feel like Red Bull will always be able to offer him stuff to keep him interested and engaged. Because Red Bull, as a company, okay, maybe it's changed a little bit and become a bit more corporate since the Dietrich Mateschitz days, but it's got the resources and the flexibility to offer him pretty much anything.
And it's a winning team. That's what he wants to do. Yeah. He wants to win, doesn't he?
Exactly. And it's a winning team he's built up as well. Yeah. He's been absolutely integral. So I don't know. I'd be surprised if he moves. And I think Aston Martin, as Lawrence said, they're making good progress. Adrian Newey's not the only person who understands this stuff. Okay, he is an absolute genius. He's got a fantastic understanding. He draws together all those different parts of the racing car, the aerodynamics, the engineering and mechanical side, vehicle dynamics, all of these things. And as we've talked about at length before, he is perhaps unusual in that he has got the active grounding in all of them, which is harder to have for those who are younger. But F1 is not a game of just employing Adrian Newey. It is not that simple.
Well, I don't know. And I mean, plenty of teams have tried, haven't they?
I mean, I think any team would benefit from him, no question. It's a question of whether a team, if it's going to succeed, has to have him. Is he a prerequisite for success? Well, I don't think he's a complete prerequisite for success. He's probably a guarantee of it, but he's not the only path. And that, you know, I think Adrian Newey he's worth every ounce of his reputation. He is. Absolutely. He's both a genius, but also has such a down-to-earth, grounded, real-world-based, pragmatic approach. And that's what he combines. He combines the intellectual and the reality and the theory and the practical.
He's like four or five people in one, isn't he? He's like aerodynamicist, designer, race engineer, driver. Like, he's got all these different strings to his bow.
And he sets the direction. These are the priorities. This is how we trade everything off. And he's brilliant I'd say it's a bit late for getting Newey probably now, because let's say you recruited him, whatever terms are, he's not going to be on active service for at least a year, probably more. You'd really need him in place to work on the 26 project, because one of the things he's brilliant at is working out what the performance biases are of any sets of regs. What's the opportunity? What is the key overall concept and philosophy to make a car work? And what do we work to? Because he doesn't do it all, but he sets those parameters and those directions and those ideas, that creativity.
And it's likely, certainly possible, that 2026 becomes a bit more of an engine-biased formula again, because that's a major change coming. And of course, where the last major engine change came, that biased the formula away from Newey's strength, which is the aerodynamics in the chassis. And he became quite disillusioned with F1 until that balanced out in the latter part of the last decade, and of which he's come to the fore again. So it's a good point about the timing, because if going into 2026, actually the engine is the thing that you really need, it won't matter so much what Newey's able to bring. And if it's not that, and it's still chassis aerodynamics that dominates the performance equation or balances out the engine side of the equation, then absolutely he's the guy you want, but you won't be able to get him in the short term. So,
but it's going to be both. The car's going to be significant as well. And I guess the key question is, Lawrence, do we think that what Aston Martin's got with Dan Fallows, with obviously they've brought Bob Bell in, is coming in now as well, having been at Alpine, they've got Luca Fabbato, that they've got Eric Blondin, they've got a lot of very good people they've recruited. So I guess the key question is, for Aston Martin, is it just a question of grinding along? Everything's in place. They've got the wind tunnel coming. They've got the new facility. And they'll gradually improve. And at X point in the distant future, if they get everything right, they will be in a position to be the best. Or does there need to be an injection of something, whether that's Newey or something else?
I think we're too early in the project to necessarily say they need that injection at the minute. I feel like we're in the early days. They're putting all the building blocks in place. I think the key thing for that team is whether or not they can ever get out of the Jordan Force India midfield mindset and really accept that they are a big team and operate in that way. I think those kind of growing pains, we've seen examples of that even last year when they brought the upgrade mid-season that didn't kind of deliver what they had hoped for. I think, you know, a big team on a big mentality, you don't tend to see that happen so much. So I think the key thing is just the culture, I think. And if they can change that, they've got all of the people in place. They've got the facility in place. They've got the infrastructure in place that I think they should be able to make those steps. And then it might be that you do then need the Adrian Newey or that James Allison or that big name to come in and kind of add the icing to the project. But I think at the minute, they still need to build up everything to try and make it like a super team. And I think at the minute they're doing that. And it just does honestly take time. You can't cheat. You can't shortcut things in Formula One. We've seen over the years that it takes a decade, really, to get yourself from one spot to the top.
Five years is now 10 years. It always used to be the five-year project, didn't it? Alpine need to hear this, Reto.
Alpine and their series of 18-month projects.
But 5 years just isn't enough, is it? It just isn't enough.
but it is such a difficult thing because in Formula One, development progress and the work is done is really rapid, but actually also progress relative is glacial because everybody is making progress. Even Alpine have built a very good racing car. It's a very quick car. It's terrible relative to the rest of it. As Tom McCullough, the performance director at Aston Martin,
and their own expectations,
loves saying, it's a relative game, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. So
you've got
this baseline. Everybody is making a baseline amount of progress, and it's just, what's your progress? Is it X plus 10 or X plus 5, whatever those numbers happen to apply to? But it's incredibly difficult, therefore, because it's tempting to look at a team that's a bit behind and think there's lots catastrophically wrong. But all of these teams have got far more right than wrong. Okay, Red Bull's got the most right, but it's small things. And it's actually quite difficult if you're at Aston Martin to answer that question of actually what are these little things we move? Because actually it'll be a million different things all being 0.5% better. That's what it comes down to.
The mindset thing that Lawrence mentioned is quite significant, I think, in the sense that the development curve is also, it flattens, it's exponential and flattens at the top. So it gets much harder to make gains as you get higher up compared to when you were lower down. You can see it with McLaren. You know, they made phenomenal progress through last year because they were starting from a low base and very much behind where they should be. But despite the momentum of last season and some quite punchy talk, I mean, you were there in January at the surprise season launch, Reto. They were really talking a good game in terms of, oh, we're seeing no flatlining of anything and we're just going to kick right on. They haven't really done that. They've done a good job at staying where they are, up near the top, but actually making that leap like Ferrari has done is really quite difficult. And Aston Martin will maybe last year was the first sign of hitting that, you know, after making quite big steps through the Vettel period and early into 23, they then kind of hit the bump and they seem to have recovered from that. But they haven't, again, kicked on in terms of relative progress. So if they start hitting that flat spot, it's then working out, well, why are we hitting that flat spot? Is it personnel? Do we need to change more people? Do we need to sideline some people who are maybe not quite up to the job? Do we need to find people from outside? Is it some kind of technology trick that we're missing? It's a very complicated system. And even teams that are doing very well and are maybe further ahead on the journey overall than they are, like McLaren, are running into this kind of trouble.
The interesting thing is, if I just had a quick glance at the numbers, just going on what we tend to call super times, which is the single lap pace, it's the quickest single lap of every car every weekend, because that's the one comparison. I know there's an offset to race pace, but race pace is a much more complicated equation. But Aston Martin is basically where it was last year. On average, they're 0.613% off over the first four this year. They were 0.7 last year, but Azerbaijan was a bit of an outlier. In the first three last year, they were 0.586. So basically speaking, you can say that Aston Martin, relative to Red Bull, are about the same as they were last year. It's just that more teams have slotted into the gap in between. So it's a question of whether is that good progress or is that bad progress, Lawrence? Or is that absolutely on the line average, good, fine progress. So they've gone nowhere, really.
I think it's average, fine progress, isn't it? I think they are disappointed that they are the bottom of the top five teams at the minute. But I think there is also an acceptance that actually there is something to be said for not dropping back again. Like you said, Ben, like McLaren haven't really kicked on. At least Aston haven't fallen back. At least they haven't made any kind of dramatic changes over the winter that's actually made them worse or kind of lost the direction.
Well, they made a big push to change the profile of speed profile of the car, didn't they? I think Alonso said they've gone more biased towards high speed, whereas low speed was their strength last year, and they needed more of a trade-off. And then maybe because the calendar's slightly different at the start of this year, that changes it a bit because the comparison's not exactly the same.
Well, the comparison's interesting because they were the biggest improver at Suzuka in terms of lap time 6 months ago to Suzuka this weekend in terms of qualifying lap time. The biggest step, it was 1.8, 1.9 seconds from memory.
So that suggests that their rebiasing has been successful. You know, what they set out to do over the winter has worked to an extent because a track they would have been relatively weak at, they're now relatively stronger at. But of course, it comes with compromises. So does that mean at Monaco, which was a race that Alonso could have won with a different strategy call and almost took pole for, will they be as strong this year? You'd expect probably not. The real challenge is obviously to raise the bar in certain areas while not sacrificing what you're already good at. And I think that's what McLaren's battled. You know, they've got high speed strength. And I think in Suzuka, they were closer to Red Bull in the S's than they were in 2023, only 6 months ago. But this low speed performance that they were already deficient at, they haven't really made any progress with. And I imagine they've run to some kind of rut where they realise, yes, we could do this and make the car much, much better at Monaco and in this hairpin and this chicane, but we'd lose X amount of high speed performance. And when you look at it, there's more high speed than low speed, isn't there, I think, in F1 broadly? Certainly Red Bull
seems but you're in low speed for longer.
You're in low speed for longer, yes. But a lot of teams have realised that they're too draggy on the straight. They don't have enough consistent downforce at high speed. Everyone's working towards that. Ferrari, I think, are slightly ahead of that game. I think they made that progress last year, but the car became too peaky. And then over the winter, they've realised if we can just smoothen these rough edges out, actually, we'll have a really, really performant car. And they do. And Mercedes has kind of made a similar step to Ferrari over the winter, but a year later, and now they're into that, oh, this car's actually really peaky again and we can't quite access everything, and they probably now need a season to flatten that out. And McLaren are just kind of stuck because they're really good at one specific thing, but adding the other things is very difficult. And then that comes down to, have you got the right personnel, the right facilities, the right understanding, the right technologies, blah 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 blah. And Aston are probably in a similar place to McLaren, but just with slightly different challenges to overcome.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think if you're Alonso, Lawrence, to come back to our starting topic, you're probably thinking 26 is the big, big opportunity, isn't it? We can assume chances are Red Bull are going to be winning the championship again next year. Obviously, it could still turn around this year, although there's nothing to say it will. So that's the opportunity. It's the Honda engine, isn't it? We know how strong they are.
The GP2 engine.
Well, exactly, yeah. There'd be great irony, wouldn't there, if Alonso were to suddenly win a championship with a Honda engine. Wouldn't have seen that.
Best engine ever.
But yeah, it's there's a chance, isn't there? There is a chance with everything they've got. Maybe 26 comes that fraction too early for them. Maybe the ideal would have been 27 with their current progress, but there is an opportunity there for Aston with everything they've thrown at it to coalesce and come up with a car engine package that could potentially be market leading or vying to be market leading. Then that's what Alonso's hoping for.
Oh, that's definitely what Alonso's hoping for, and he'll be hoping that Honda react to these engine regs in the way that they have done over the last 3, 4, 5 years, with kind of developing that power unit into really the class leading power unit. I think they're going to be on the back foot a little bit because they've had to recruit a lot of personnel, having lost a lot of those personnel to the Red Bull Powertrains group. I think they've got...
Stopping their old program hasn't helped them, has it?
They've no.
They've lost that consistency.
And then they are going to be working with a team in Aston Martin who aren't yet a proper works outfit. So just the way that you interact with the team will be slightly different to the way that you would interact with a Red Bull, who are used to being a works team. So I think how that develops will be critical. But I do think that in terms of what Fernando thought, that was his best case scenario. I agree with you, Ed, that it's come a little bit too early. You know, they're still working on what the suspension doing the hydraulics, the gearbox themselves. These are all major projects that they're going to have to get off the ground for 2026. And that's all going to have to interlink with the aero side and then a new engine partner. And even if you've got the best facilities, that's still a massive challenge to do all of those things individually very well. And then critically get them working together efficiently. So, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, they probably could have done with 3 or 4 years really to kind of get things up and running before this major regulation change. But they are doing the best with what they've got. And I do think a change will help them. A change in regulations will give them a chance to make that big step. But then having said that, every other team on the grid are going to be hoping that the new regulations are going to give them the shot to make that big step up the pecking order.
Yeah, it's a time of great opportunity. But yeah, that's what everybody's hoping, isn't it? Everybody's trying to position themselves to tie all this together. Alonso, all the other drivers, positioning themselves to 26. Because the only seat that could potentially, the only place you'd go for 25 and look short term would be Red Bull. And there's every chance that you're going to be locked out, because although there's this persistent rumour about the possibility of Verstappen leaving, it seems pretty unlikely, doesn't it? I think we're assuming he will still be there next year. And Perez looks like he's on track to hang on to it. As Christian Horner said after Suzuka, the seat is Checo's to lose. So yeah, there's a long game being played there, and that's what's going to really drive the driver market shenanigans that will be going on daily in the background until at least we get the next move and everything shifts again, because a lot of the teams don't really know what they're going to end up with. They know what they want, they know what they could end up with, but how it'll shake out, there's a lot of knock-on effects to be had. Well, thank you very much to Ben, and thanks in particular to our special guest Lawrence Barreto for your great insight. Check out therace.com, loads to read there. Lots of other podcasts as well, including the Race F1 Tech Show with Gary Anderson. And also have a look at our YouTube channel. We're going to be turning our attention to China next. So stay with us for everything you need to know from the world of F1.
The Athletic.